When a candidate supports legal abortion, what is he or she really supporting? Find out from those who used to do the procedure. Coming next on Gospel of Life. I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program. We are close to our national elections, and some candidates are saying that they support legal abortion, that they stand in favor of Roe versus Wade. One thing you will never hear these candidates do is describe the abortion procedure or talk about the horrors that occur inside of legal abortion clinics. Today, we are joined by two very special guests, friends of mine, but Lorraine Leneve and Dr. Anthony Levitino. Welcome to both of you. Of course, what we want to help our viewers understand today is what the abortion procedure actually is and what abortion facilities actually do. And the two of you know that very well because you've both worked in that industry and have come out and into the pro-life effort. Tell us briefly about your own experiences, your own testimony, and then let's help our viewers understand how this relates to politics. Lorraine?
I was a surgical nurse. 5.5 years I worked in the industry. 5.5 years I took young, innocent girls, taught them how to deceive their parents, not to tell them the truth, to come in and have a surgical procedure, which was very dangerous. And they would come in not knowing what their medical history is. I would take them through a surgical procedure where they were assaulted continually by instruments and by a physician who had absolutely no respect for them whatsoever. I would coerce them into writing letters to these legislators who had no idea what was going on, but they were hoodwinked by the abortion industry into keeping abortion safe and legal by young girls who wrote letters under my watch, under my authority. And then I would send them home with medication and possibly an insertion of an IUD or birth control pills, and in the hopes and anticipation that they'll come back again and have a return engagement. Purpose is money. That was the only purpose. And that's all we cared about, making sure there were lots of people bringing in lots of money. These are children.
The procedure itself, you assisted in counting the body parts afterwards, didn't you?
I certainly did. It was called a gross. And you take the products of conception from the suction machine, which supposedly was only up to 12 weeks, the first trimester abortions in that facility. But that didn't matter. They went beyond that. You would take them into the lab, and then you would count the parts, a head, eyes, two legs, two arms, hands, feet, whatever, to make sure you had all the products of conception. And then you'd place them in a container where they would be shipped out. We wanted to make sure that all the products were there so that there was nothing left in the girls so that we wouldn't have a problem.
Dr. Levitino, tell us your story in a nutshell.
I performed abortions starting in my residency training program in 1977 in New York, and when I graduated in 1980, I went into private practice and was not working in an abortion clinic per se, but was in a routine obstetrics and gynecology office where we did obstetrics, gynecology, and abortion was actually a small part of our practice. I say a small part of our practice, but in that private practice over 4 years, about 4 years, I managed to do 1,200 abortions. Those were first trimester abortions that Lorraine described briefly, and also second trimester abortions. You know, if your audience wants to know what this issue is about, then understand what a second trimester abortion is about. Imagine that your patient is 17 years old and asleep on an operating room table. Her uterus is up to her umbilicus because she's 20 weeks pregnant, and a baby at that age is about the length of your hand. First thing you would use is a suction catheter to drain the amniotic fluid out of the out of the uterus. That's there to protect the baby, but you drain it. You drain it using a catheter. In suction abortions, you can complete the abortion with the suction catheter because these babies are much smaller. But when babies are this big, they don't fit through suction catheters. We then use a grasping instrument called a Sofer clamp. And you would reach inside. A D&E abortion, a second trimester abortion, is a blind procedure. And you would reach inside with this instrument and literally rip the arms and legs off of this child and then tear it to pieces, intestines, spine, heart and lungs. The difficult part of that procedure was the head, because the head on a baby that size is about the size of a small plum, and it's floating around freely inside the uterus. And to tell people, you would know you did it right if you got a hold of it with your clamp and the clamp was spread as far as it would go, and you would know you did it right when you crushed down on the clamp and some white material would run out of the cervix, which was the baby's brains. And then you could pull out skull pieces. What Lorraine said about body parts is really important. The same thing with the D&E abortion. You used to have to literally stack these body parts at the side, on the side of the table, and had to count two arms, two legs, and make sure that everything was there. Because if it wasn't, your patient would come back infected, bleeding, or worse.
So the two of you know abortion from the inside.
Absolutely.
You have seen it. You have touched it. You have done it.
Absolutely.
Now, you lobbied legislators.
Yes,
did they have any idea that you were counting heads and arms and legs?
They didn't care. That wasn't their concern. Their concern was that they were being wined and dined. They were taken care of politically by PACs and so forth to make sure that their re-elections and elections were funded. They didn't know anything about the procedure itself. That was never their concern. Unfortunately, abortion has corrupted our politicians.
In what sense?
Because they are bought and paid for by the abortion industry, by the radical feminists, by all these movements. They don't know what's going on. They don't care. They are so callous that when you present them with facts suggesting or stating clearly that breast cancer has a direct correlation to abortion, you'd think they would do something about that. They cry about health and health care and so forth and women and all that. They don't pay any attention. All they know is what they hear from NOW and NARAL and National Abortion Federation and from all the radical groups out there. They don't have an idea.
Well, Dr. Levitino, when you hear candidates say, we're in favor of pro-choice, what do you think when you hear that? How does that make you feel?
I think that the politics in this nation has gotten so polarized, there basically really are two Americas and more people, and I'm certainly not an original comment on my part. I think that the life issue is a really critical issue when looking at politicians. Obviously, that's my view based on my experience. And I suppose I can't say it any more succinctly than this. If a politician will not do everything in their power to support and preserve the life of children, then how can I possibly rely on that politician to take care of me? And I even think of that even very specifically in terms of my life as I get older. Because the two ends of the life debate isn't only about abortion. It's about all aspects of life, including end of life. Mm-hmm. Now, we're rapidly getting to a time that the very same people who make decisions about whether children live or die in abortions are going to be making decisions about whether I live or die when it comes my time to be older or ill when the time comes. Mm-hmm. I find that very frightening.
Right now, we are close to our national elections, and for a voter to think about the benefits or the downside of politicians who come along and say we do want to limit abortions or we do want to outlaw abortions altogether, what are the implications of that, not only for the life of the children, but for the well-being of these girls who come to the legal abortion clinics? You were talking to us in another episode about how even cases of minors being pregnant were never reported, instances of possible sexual abuse of a minor. the legal abortion facilities that you worked with never reported these things, and we have more evidence today than ever that across the nation they don't report these instances. Tell us more about that angle of this whole thing.
Well, I think it's a question of people understanding what abortion is and their responsibility. As Dr. Leventano said, if you don't respect life from the very beginning, you're not going to respect life all the way through. Mm-hmm. These politicians need to understand, and people need to understand when they go to the polls, most especially if they're Christian, they are mandated by God to vote morally, to follow his tenets. You don't have the option of allowing people to kill. And life is very, very precious. These babies that we throw away and these politicians that cry crocodile tears, the fact of the matter is all the instances of murder, of child abuse, of rape, all these things are all part of the abortion industry and reasons why people should understand the destruction of abortion. They need to vote in a moral sense. They need to. Rape is not even reported. Nothing is reported. But people need to be able to go to God. And if they truly are believers, Christians, Catholics, Jews, if they truly honor God, they're mandated. And you need to have politicians who will eliminate this horror from our land and stop the flow of the blood of the innocents. When that stops, you're not going to have as many murders. You're not going to have children being thrown away like garbage. We will once again have respect. We need to have respect.
The pro-choice politicians try to present themselves as pro-woman and in favor of women's health. Dr. Leventano, is a position that would allow abortion favoring women's health?
You could argue this one all day long, and we don't have enough time on the program probably to go into every aspect of that. Abortion negatively impacts women's health in many, many ways, and this is based on personal observation and experience. Lorraine brought up the subject of breast cancer. There is conflicting evidence on breast cancer as far as medical research is concerned. But there are far more studies that show a link between breast cancer and abortion than there are studies that supposedly show that they are not, that there is not. I've seen many women very personally and psychologically impacted by abortion. I have seen women physically injured by abortion. I have seen patients who had abortions. Very common occurrence is a woman has an abortion, and most of them are making the assumption that they will simply be able to get pregnant again in the future. And oftentimes that does not happen for various reasons, because of infections, because of injury that can occur during abortion. And sometimes it just doesn't happen because it just doesn't happen. And that assumption that, I can always go on and have children doesn't always pan out. Mm-hmm. So women can be impacted very, very seriously by abortion in many, many ways, and many times this is not being looked at. We talked about children, especially underage children. This is particularly disturbing. We often hear about, what about a case of incest? And I look at that and I say, well, now let's look at that problem very carefully. My goal is to preserve this woman's health and protect this young lady who is an underage minor. Now, when somebody gets brought in under these circumstances for an abortion, who do you think is bringing her into the clinic to have the abortion? Many times it's going to be the perpetrator. And when you provide this abortion, quote, for her health, does this also mean that she's going to, do we even know that a case of incest has happened here? Have we made any effort whatsoever to help prevent this occurrence from happening again? In the end, an abortion under those circumstances, and this can happen very frequently, is really protecting the perpetrator, not the child.
We have candidates running for office now who are not even willing to ban partial birth abortion, which, as you know well, is a procedure where the child is mostly delivered already, alive, and then destroyed before the rest of the body is taken from the mother. Now, What they will say, knowing full well that most of the American people reject this procedure, is that, yes, I'm opposed to it also, but we have to leave it legal in cases where the life or health of the woman depends upon this procedure. And yet I've never heard anyone in the legal or the medical arena bring forward any instance where this procedure is the only way to save a mother's life or to preserve her health.
Statements about partial birth abortion being necessary to save women's life are garbage. And I'm telling you as a professional, they are garbage. For many years, I worked as a faculty member at the Albany Medical College in Albany, New York. This is a tertiary referral center. Many centers across the country are set up as tertiary referral centers for the most complicated, difficult pregnancies. Rather than duplicate facilities all over the country, specific centers are designated for physicians to refer their very high-risk pregnancies. And I worked in such a center. I have seen hundreds and hundreds of women and personally treated hundreds of women with severe diabetes, severe cardiac disease, toxemia to the point of where you're worrying about strokes occurring, situations wherein pregnancy truly is life-threatening to the mother. And as I tell people, as a pro-life physician working at the Albany Medical Center, I have terminated hundreds of pregnancies to save the woman's life. Hear carefully what I said. I have terminated the pregnancy process, ended the pregnancy in order to save the woman's life. I have never once had to kill a child to accomplish that goal, and it is in years of experience and hundreds of such cases. Partial birth abortion, read the literature carefully, takes 3 days, 3 days to prepare the cervix in such a way that a partial birth abortion can even be performed. When I have a patient with severe cardiac disease or toxemia where her life is threatened, I do not have the luxury of waiting 3 days to be able to accomplish this delivery, to end that pregnancy. Partial birth abortion is worthless to save a woman's life in a true emergency where her life is in jeopardy.
So what you would do in that case would be to
accomplish a delivery, either induce delivery or
of a live child.
Of a living child. That's the point. Our goal is to treat mother and baby both. And there can be situations in where you might lose a child. It is possible. I can imagine such situations, but in years and hundreds of cases, I haven't had it happen once yet.
In other words, losing a child is not the same as killing one.
Absolutely not. You're not going into the procedure with the intention of killing a child. You're going to that procedure with the intention of saving both mother and baby.
So now, Lorraine, and you're very familiar with the world of politics because you've run for office as well, and I know, Dr. Levitino, you and your family have also been involved in the political realm. So what is going on here then with these candidates? I mean, is it that they simply don't know that something like partial birth abortion is never necessary for a woman's health? Is it that they don't care? Are they just trying to lead people along to make them think that, you know, I'm the one that you have to vote for? How do we explain this phenomenon of these presumably well-educated men and women standing up and saying, but we must preserve the right to choose?
The words of Lord Acton come into play. That power corrupts, it corrupts absolutely. They're power hungry. They've crossed over into barbarism. They are so controlled, and I will use the word controlled, by the feminists, by the abortion lobby, that they are no longer free thinkers and they're unable to make a rational decision. They don't want to. I would say this openly, which I say many times when I debate, they're bought and paid for, and that's your answer.
I can name many politicians who early in their career were pro-life.
Yes.
Two people come immediately to mind, Jesse Jackson, who's not technically a politician, but he's certainly heavily involved in politics, and Al Gore as our Democratic candidate for the last election. We're both rabidly pro-life. Mm-hmm. And I believe, you know, as they rise higher and higher in different organizations, not just particular political parties, that they get the message early on that if you're not going to be pro-abortion, then you can forget rising in this party. Mm-hmm. And I think that does play a role.
That plays a role, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, we are grateful for the testimony that you give throughout the year to people all over the country about what you have seen and participated in the abortion industry and how you've become pro-life, and we're going to have you on other programs as well. But in the last moment or two of this episode, give a message to voters as they're getting ready for Election Day and as people who have been front and center in the abortion industry. Give a word of encouragement and instruction to our voters.
As someone who has run for office and who has worked in the abortion industry and is quite aware of what they are, I say to you, please, do research if you must to understand what abortion truly is. Look for the candidates that stand for your moral equivalency. Look in the Bible. Go to your church. Go to God and ask Him to direct you. This is a very crucial year. This is a year that America could very well lose its soul and never again rise to the power and the position that it's been and what God intended it to be. And you must vote.
Life issues and moral issues are the most critical issues in any election, and this year is absolutely no exception. What can you do? Get off the couch, get out, and register and vote. Half of the Christians in this country are not registered. Half of the registered Christians don't go out and vote. If every Christian registered and voted in a biblical manner, as Lorraine has spoken of, we would be running this show. We wouldn't even be having this discussion.
Amen. Thank you both very much, and we'll look forward to our future programs together. And thank you, brothers and sisters, for joining us for this program. Now, next, you're going to see our action spot, where you'll be given even more things that you can do. But go to votinginfo.org, which is a website that will guide you to the positions of some of the candidates in the upcoming election. And also go to gospeloflife.com/vote, where you'll be able to find even more information to help you carry out your civic responsibility. Let's take part in this election in a way that will build and advance the culture of life. Stay with us. Brothers and sisters, welcome to our action segment. At gospeloflife.com, you will find everything that we're going to talk about now in great detail and many other things that you can do as Election Day approaches. It's very important to take note of the many products we have available and of the many things you can do with them. So, Janet, where do we start?
Well, we want to start with legal activity, and very often when people want to distribute literature, people say, oh, you can't be here, you can't be there. And what we have is a booklet that is called the Legal Symposium Booklet that we had at the Ave Maria School of Law. Legal experts from around the country were there, and this booklet, you present it to your pastor or leaders of groups so that they know exactly what they can and can't do.
The Church and Politics, Are We As Restricted As We Think?
That's
the name of the seminar, and that booklet is available. They can also listen to the entire seminar on our website, audio, and also download in print version from the website the texts of those presentations.
That's right. The other thing is we want to talk about now moving into education.
Yes.
and how to educate your voters. Well, we have several resources, starting with a thing called Living the Gospel of Life, and that's a document created by the United States bishops in 1998, and we've written a study guide for that booklet. We're encouraging people in like Bible study groups, prayer groups, or even if you want to get some friends over your home and go through that document with the study guide, and that will really make people realize why abortion and euthanasia are your fundamental issues when you're looking at candidates.
And that study guide also can be followed on the internet, and even though that document was written by the Catholic bishops, it's not about Catholic doctrine as such. It's about what Christians need to do in America to take part in elections.
That's correct. Then moving along, you know, we have to think about little things. Some people are not going to read a lot of information. We have nice little brochures that can go in a parish literature rack. They can be distributed at your meetings. And these are titles such as Caesar Must Obey God, religious beliefs, abortion, and the law.
And those are available in English and Spanish, the two you
correct.
Just mentioned.
Those two are English and Spanish. And then before on one of these programs, we talked about the idea of if someone supported terrorism, you wouldn't even ask where they were on the other issues. Well, that's how we feel about abortion. Well, we have a brochure that talks about that whole principle called You Wouldn't Even Ask. Then there's another one that talks about 10 responses to pro-abortion politicians. And this goes through those arguments that not just the politicians, but even other people who are pro-abortion will use. And this gives you a great way to have those, you know, as you say, cocktail party conversations with people, or when you're sitting around at a meeting, waiting for a meeting to start. It's a great way to convince people on the issue.
The Reflections on the Political Responsibility of Christians is another booklet we have, as well as What Does the Church Teach on Life Issues, which shows the relationship between the different issues
right.
as we approach elections. What about for radio programs?
Well, we have a great CD. It has these 30-second and one-minute spots. They're professionally done, and they're just ready to present to your radio, local radio station to use. They're great little PSAs. And also, you can use them in schools or before a meeting. Many a times, a school has PA announcements over the PA before the start of the school day. They can play a different spot every day, so high school and college students will get informed about the issues.
These 30-second and one-minute spots on the political responsibility of Christians can also be downloaded from the website WAV files or as MP3 files, and people can use them in that way too.
That's correct. And then, you know, a lot of people see you, Father, on our show, and I know you speak. We have other speakers with Gospel of Life that go around the country speaking, but we can only be so many places. We have a DVD of two powerful talks that you have given that people can show to other people where we can't get maybe between now and the election, and this can educate people on political responsibility of Christians.
We also have bulletin inserts for the churches in parish bulletins. We have camera ready, and again, they're either on our website or we can send them to you on paper, camera ready text boxes that give memorable and effective quotations from religious leaders, from scripture, and also just reflections on the political responsibility of Christians. So we urge people to get hold of that as well.
That's right. You know, everyone has to play their part. If we're going to change people's minds and we're going to turn things around in our nation, we've got to educate people. And we need everyone watching this show to really get involved, order one of these resources, and help make the education of Christians happen.
Well, thank you, Janet. And thank you, brothers and sisters. Again, go to gospeloflife.com and you'll see how you can educate voters, show them what the positions of candidates are, and above all, get out the vote and work on people getting to the polls. Let's make sure our voices are heard and God's will is advanced in this year's elections. God bless you. Thank you for joining us.
I'm Dr. Paul Shank, Executive Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Father Frank Pavone, Janet Moran, and I want to personally invite you to be a strategic part of this new, exciting, and challenging work. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." The objective of Gospel of Life Ministries is to reach out to Christians of all denominations and churches and bring them together in practical ways to proclaim the Gospel of Life and to build a culture of life. If you are a committed Christian, a pastor, Sunday school teacher, church leader, pro-life volunteer, if you have a burden to see believers cooperate together, we'd like to hear from you. To obtain our resources, contact us at Gospel of Life Ministries, P.O. Box 60038, Staten Island, New York, 10306. Call us at 718-980-4400 and visit us at www.gospeloflife.net.